Thank you for listening to this sermon from Arapahoe Road Baptist Church. We hope you enjoyed the teaching of our guest speaker this week. For more information about our church and its ministries, please visit arapahoeroad.org.
And there's something good when we have a healthy rhythm going on in our life, isn't there? If you'd agree with that, say yes.
Yes.
That's a good thing when we have that. I want to talk about that some today, but before we do, let's define what we're talking about. I want to define healthy rhythm. I think there's a slide for that, so read this with me. I'll read it out loud. You follow along. For our purposes today, this is what we're going to say a healthy rhythm is. A healthy rhythm speaks to the pace and intentionality by which we are investing our time and our priorities while living in right relationship with God. Let me read that again. A healthy rhythm speaks to the pace and intentionality by which we're investing our time and our priorities while living in a right relationship with God. So there's something good about having a healthy rhythm in our life, because a healthy rhythm helps to provide order in our life. And when there's order in our life, order leaves room for margin. And it's the margin that I want us to really talk about today. Because it's in the margin where we see God so often choose to speak. And sometimes God waits for us to have margin before he will speak. Your ability to hear God speak clearly in your life is in direct proportion to the amount of margin that exists in your life. Your ability to hear God speak clearly in your life is in direct proportion to the amount of margin that exists in your life. It is in the margin in our life that we are able to abide in the Lord. So abide, that's a fancy word for accept or act in accordance with. So it's in the margin of our life that we're able to really act and live in accordance with the Lord. That's what Jesus said in John 15:5. He said, "I am the vine and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit, for apart from me, you can do nothing." By the way, today I have a really limited amount of time. I'm going to be hitting a lot of verses very quickly. So I want to be able to give you a broad context and kind of a big picture. I wouldn't normally run through a lot of verses really quickly, but I'm going to do that today, and I'm going to ask you, don't try to flip around. You're just going to end up frustrated if you do that. So just listen as we go through. I'm going to ask you to repeat some things as we go through those. And there's going to be references on the screen. You can take a picture of that if you want to write any of those down or take them with you. If you're good with that, say abide.
Abide.
All right. Most of you are. So let me read again, John 15:5. He said, "I am the vine and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." So don't miss that last part. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you don't hear anything else that I say for the rest of the day, hear that. That means there has to be time in our lives, there has to be time in our days when we, the branches, are connected to Jesus, the vine. And know that there's other things that happen in that margin where abiding takes place. In that margin of your life, that's the part of your life that's not completely filled up with a million demands and things that you have to do. It's the part of your life where you walk away from the busyness, even if it's momentary. It's the part of the life where you get away from the demands. The margin in your life is that part of your life where we pray. The margin in your life is the part where you get to think and ponder, and you get to listen, and you get to dream. The margin in your life is where you get to think about things that make your heart sing. It's where we reflect. It's where we consider who God is in light of what we read about Him in His Word. It's where we deal with the emotions and the hurts of our past. The margin in your life is one of the only real areas of your life where you get to deal with your grief. It's also the place where we express love. It's the place where we allow ourselves to engage with others. It's where we give of ourselves, and let our hearts be open to others. And if you don't have any margin left in your life right now, I think it's a pretty safe bet that you're probably not doing a lot of praying or resting. If your life lacks margin right now, you're probably not dreaming. You're probably not expressing your love to others or giving your heart as much as maybe you once did. And you probably really aren't engaging with others because you're just trying so hard to get everything done. You're trying so hard to make sure everything happens and everything is taken care of. And if that's your rhythm, it probably doesn't sound like a healthy rhythm. Your rhythm may sound more like someone who's also trying to deal with, I have extra responsibilities at work that I have to take care of. I've got a lot of paperwork I'm bringing home every night. My kids have practice. We got games. We've got games two days a week now. When did they start doing 2 days a week? I have family responsibilities. We got the laundry's not done. The weekend's over. I got to pack lunches. Somebody's got to do the dishes. We're not going to be able to eat. I've got stuff for my job. I have the PTA meeting, the house repairs. The roof is still leaking. The car hasn't been fixed. The oil hasn't been done. The list and the demands just go on and on and on and on. And before you know it, what once perhaps was a healthy rhythm in your life, you can't even hear that anymore because it just sounds like a bunch of noise. Just noise. Everybody wants a piece of you, and you have to do this, and I have to do that, and this has to be taken care of. And when you get to this point where your life is noise, you don't have time to pray. You don't have time to abide in the Lord. You have to be intentional behind those things. And when that happens, the branches begin to starve because you don't have anything else to give. You've given everything else to every one of these other little places. Because if you don't do it, then who's going to do it? Who's going to take care of all the should do's and need to do's and we have to do's and they got to do right now's? And on and on and on with every other important responsibility that somebody has to take care of. Guys, if the rhythm of your life just sounds like a lot of important noise, I'm not here to beat you up about that. I'm not here to make it sound simple. It's not simple. Most of the noise in your life is important, and it does have to get done. I get that. Nobody's going to argue with that. You know what I'm here to do? I'm here to tell you at least a little bit about how God spoke into my soul during this incredible gift of a clergy renewal leave that you gave to me and to Beth. And it was a time that we were given the opportunity to create some new margin that was desperately needed and carve out undivided time and to pull away from all the noise and the demands and the have-tos and the somebody's got to that just never seems to stop. And I get that you probably don't have the luxury of putting your life on pause for several months. What I'm here to do today is to just try to encourage you. Because if you're overwhelmed, if you have no margin left in your life, you're in such good company. Because you know how we say at the end of our services every week, one of the things we proclaim is follow Jesus. Well, Jesus is your company. He faced the same noise and the same everywhere he went, have-tos, and right now, and you've got to do this, and over and over and over again, he modeled for us what it looked like to lean into rest and into margin and into a place of solitude, of quiet, of unhurriedness, not because he had the time to do it, and not because somebody else was going to take care of the demands for us, but yet he still modeled it for us. Before I left for clergy renewal leave, David, our lead pastor, was in my office, and we were discussing what it might look like to hit the pause button on life for a few minutes. Neither one of us have done it, you know? And we were thinking, man, this is just, wow. It was the time to dream about it. What's that going to be like? And we were discussing that. We were discussing my propensity to work and how one of my coping mechanisms for stress is actually to work more, which is problematic when you're trying to de-stress. You end up just working like crazy, you know? And he said this to me in that moment. He said, I know your inclination to work is to work. So on this leave, I want you, when you're feeling the impulse to work, and the desire to be busy, and you're wondering what's going on at Arapahoe Road, I want you to intentionally lean into a place of rest and stillness and quiet, and just try to be in that place. I took that as a word from the Lord, and I did do that. Some of you are thinking, that's the greatest thing ever. But for me, that was really hard. That was hard. And I began to tune in to what it looked like to relearn to be okay with quiet and okay with stillness. What it looked like to be okay with rest. Let me tell you why thinking about doing that is hard, probably for some of you in the room today. It's hard because some of you in the room don't really lack margin because you're so busy taking care of all of the noise and the demands of your life. That's just what you would have us think. The reality for some of you in the room is that the real reason your life is so busy dealing with the noise and the demands is because perhaps you are terrified of what's waiting for you in the margin of your life, if you'll slow down long enough to see it and to face it. I want to read you a quote that I wrote in my journal while I was gone, but before I want to show you a picture. This picture is in Glorieta, New Mexico. 24 hours after I left Garland, I was on top of a mountain. Kendrick, I told you I would do it. Where are you? I told Kendrick, what are you going to do first? I'm climbing a mountain. I'm going to go up there. This spot right here is called Pulpit Point, and it looks out over Glorieta down toward Santa Fe. And this spot right here, this is where I first met Arapahoe Road back in 2002. I was leading a hiking class for a youth summer camp, and we took a big group of people up there, and there were some staff members and personnel members, and the pastor and all that was in the group, and we just had a great time. And what an appropriate place to begin this return to a pilgrimage of my walk with the Lord and go back to the place where he first called me into service here. But it was after I climbed this, I came back down. Now, when you see this quote from my journalist, day two, I think, that I wrote this. Anxiety and fear and pain and hurt need to be dealt with head on. When they are pushed into the quiet and covered up with work and with busy and relationships and laughter and full days, one has only accomplished a delay in meeting with them. When these things are not brought out where others can speak God's truth over them, they wait patiently in the dark, quiet margins of your life, waiting to jump to your attention when you're finally stopping to look for a respite of peace. And I really just hope that God is speaking directly to somebody in this room that needs to hear that today. And if he is, and maybe if he's speaking to you and you're like, I want to get out of here, I don't want to hear that, let me just encourage you to slow down and hear him out. Forget that everybody else is here. Just be still. Let him be your God. Hear him out. One of the verses that became a real anchor for me during the months away was part of Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I am God. Be still. I'm God. Be still. I'm God. Just be still. Forget the noise. Forget all of your plans. I've got this. I'm your God. And all throughout the New Testament, we see Jesus modeling for us what it looks like to be still and to connect with the vine. And we see Jesus over and over pulling away from the noise, pulling away from the demands, pulling away from the responsibilities and the have-tos. And you got to come heal them and teach these people and the need-tos and the right-nows. And we see him mixing into his work and mixing into his busy schedule a pattern of solitude and silence and unhurriedness. That reminds me a lot of the part of my clergy renewal leave that I've come to refer to. It's just the withness between me and God. It's a part of the clergy renewal leave that reminded me of being in one of the places that you never really want to be as a pastor, and that's in the family room in a hospital. Those are the rooms where grief normally runs deep, and your words just don't matter all that much. But you know what does matter in those moments? Your presence, your withness. And I remembered one of those times I sat in one of those family rooms with a particular family of Arapaho Road. And at the moment, they received the news that their world was over. Your child didn't make it. And they sat in the margin of their life and they allowed grief to just wash over them. In that moment, I knew there's nothing that I can say right now. There's no words that are going to matter here. And I reached out and I grabbed hold of the hand of the Father. And we just held each other's hands and we cried together. I knew the best thing I could do for them in that moment was just to be with them and let them deal with their pain. Sometimes that's what facing the margin in our life is, guys. Sometimes that's also why we choose not to. But the problem is when we choose not to face the margin because we don't want to deal with the hard stuff, it means that we're also missing out on abiding in the vine. And when you aren't abiding in the vine, it's only a matter of time until you starve to death. What did Jesus say? I am the vine and you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Not for long anyway. Jesus knew this about us. He understood it about us. And that's why he modeled for us over and over and over again how to pull away from the noise and away from the demands and embrace the solitude and the silence of connecting with him. All right, I want you to listen to these examples of when Jesus pulled away from all the noise and embraced the solitude and the silence, almost like his own little clergy renewal leaves. I'm going to throw a lot of verses at you. Wouldn't normally do that. We're going to go quick, and then I'm going to ask you to respond, okay? If you're okay with that, say yes. I want you to listen as we're doing that for the examples of Jesus creating margin in his life. Mark 1, 12 to 13. At once the Spirit sent him, Jesus, out into the desert. And he was in the desert for 40 days. Say, abide in God's Spirit. Mark 1, 16. As Jesus walked, and the implication here is that he's walking by himself. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two fishermen named Simon and Andrew. And he said to them, come, follow me. Say, time alone to reflect. Now notice on that one, during his time of withdrawing, he stopped to lead. Just take note of that. We'll talk about that later. Mark 1:35 to 37, very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up, he left the house, and he went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and they found him, and they proclaimed, everyone is looking for you. Everyone is looking for you. Say, solitude and prayer. In Luke and Mark, you see the references up there. Despite Jesus' plea that his miracles be kept secret, yet the news about him spread all the more, and so crowds of people came to hear him and be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. And as a result of the news of Jesus spreading, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Say, margin and rest. Mark 2:13, once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. Say, quiet time alone to reflect. Mark 3, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed. Say, withdrew. Luke 6 and Mark 3, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him. Say, solitude and prayer. Matthew 13 and Mark 4, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him when he got into a boat and sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables. Say, withdraw. Here's another example of a time when he was trying to withdraw, but he stopped doing that so that he could lead. He doesn't always do that, but he's done that a couple of times. Matthew 14 and Matthew 22, this is just after John the Baptist was beheaded. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. You see what he's doing there? Say, grief. Does it say the word grief? No. But as a direct response to hearing John the Baptist, Jesus immediately withdrew to a solitary place as if to say, I need a minute. But that passage isn't over, because while he was alone grieving, verse 13 continues, hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd and he had compassion on them and he healed their sick. And we know that after that teaching with that crowd, it was so late in the day and people were so far from town. This is where Jesus fed the 5,000. So he met their needs after that time of teaching, and as soon as it was over, this happened. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get in the boat, go on ahead of him to the other side, while he dismissed the crowd. Now listen, after he had dismissed them, he did not go join the disciples. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. And I just think this is remarkable from a pastoral perspective, because we see the lead pastor who's heard some hard news about loss, and he withdraws to that place of margin in his life to be able to grieve, and he's not even finished grieving yet. The people have found him. They've come. So he chooses to stop his grief and care for his flock and attend to their needs. And the first thing that he does when he's done with that is to get away from them and get away from his leadership and return to a place of solitude. We know for prayer, because it says he prayed, I would presume, to complete the grieving that was interrupted when the crowd found him. I just mention that, guys, because sometimes we have to do that. Mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, husband, wife. Sometimes we have to leave our place of need to go meet the needs of and care for those that we're responsible for. But it doesn't mean that we don't return to that place of margin where we can abide with the Father to deal with our stuff. That's what Jesus was doing. He stopped his grief, he went and met the needs, and then he went back to where he could abide, where he could connect to the vine. Just a few more. Mark 7. Jesus entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his present secret. Say, peace and quiet. Luke 9. Once when Jesus was praying in private and his disciples were with him, he asked them, who do the crowd say that I am? Say, prayer. Matthew 15. Jesus went on from there and walked beside the Sea of Galilee, and he went up on the mountain and sat down there. Say, solitude and time to think. Mark 9. Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up on a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. Say, abide. Just a few more. Luke 7. Here we see Jesus walking from Galilee to Jerusalem, which would have probably taken him about 5 days to walk that distance. After his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he, Jesus, also went up, but not publicly, in secret. So he walked by himself in solitude for those 5 days. Say, solitude. Luke 22, Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw away from all of them, and he knelt down and he prayed. Say, withdrew in prayer. Mark 14, they went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And then going a little further, he fell to the ground and prayed. Say, solitude in prayer. And at Jesus' crucifixion in Luke, darkness came over the whole land. Jesus called out in a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Say, abide. As I learn to be more and more comfortable with the stillness and just the withness of the Lord, these verses were an encouragement to me. And there were moments and days and weeks during my time away where it felt like, and this was the best way I could describe it, and I was sharing with the staff when I got back, it felt like it was just me and the Lord sitting together on our own in that hospital family room. And he wasn't saying anything to me because words didn't matter, but I knew that he was there, and he was allowing this withness to take place between us. And in that witness, I knew that he was saying, put your to-do list aside. Stop talking about the goals. Stop planning the next steps. I don't care about the theme that you guys all came up with together. Stop worrying about Arapahoe Road. Just be with me right now. There's a witness here. Won't you just abide? Won't you just be still? I'm your God. Friends, it's so important that as people who follow Jesus, we're being intentional about creating and protecting those moments of margin and solitude and rest in our lives. Five months ago, I couldn't hear anything but noise either. And if I'm really honest with you, 5 months ago, I was probably within a year of walking away from ministry, if not permanently, at least for a season. That's hard for me to say to you. But you know what? You need to hear that. You need to hear sometimes somebody on the platform say something like that to you so that you understand where your staff is at. And most churches are never trusted enough for anybody to say that to them. I trust you enough to say that to you. It was too much. The demands and the have-tos and the right-nows and the who else is going to do it? They robbed the margin away. And you know what? They were all important. They all had to be done. But the margin was simply gone. It was gone because of the demands on my plate, but it was also gone because somewhere along the way, I wasn't doing well enough to follow the models of Jesus constantly pulling away. Everybody's looking for you. Don't care. I'm pulling away. What are we going to do? Doesn't matter. I'm pulling away. Somewhere along the way, I wasn't doing well enough to follow Jesus' model of escaping the crowd and the leaders and the and retreating into solitude and being okay with silence. Being okay with unhurriedness. Being okay with witness, with no words. And the branches were starving from the vine. By the way, if you're one of the people in the room I was talking about earlier, if God perhaps is speaking to you about the margin in your life right now, you might need to have a conversation with somebody in your life and let them know, I need this. That might be easy for some of you because it's a simple conversation, and it might be hard for you, for some of you, because it's not just a simple conversation. Especially if you're avoiding facing whatever's waiting in those dark margins of your life. You might need to write somebody a letter today in your life and tell them, I need you to figure out how to help me carve out some margin. Because there's some things I need to deal with. There's some hurt that I haven't looked at in a long time because I've been taking care of this. There's some grief that I've never really dealt with because I wanted to get back to help and take care of this. And there's some dreams that I haven't thought about in years that I need to revisit. There's some reconnecting I need to do with the vine because I am starving. And I need you to help me do that. And if you don't have somebody to write that letter to, write it to me. Write it to David. Send us an email. We'll figure out next steps to help you be able to breathe again. You might be the person that receives the letter. You might be the person that needs to help somebody figure out what that looks like to create some margin. All of that, a lot of that, is some of the context to why we're even talking about clergy renewal leave. This incredible gift to be able to create margin in your life. This gift of time to upset rhythms that have been in place for years and to reset into a completely different tempo. I'm not going to go on a lot more now. Don't have time to right now about what we did on the clergy renewal. But I want to invite you back this evening at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Beth and I are going to share together. Be very informal, a lot more personal, a lot of stories, lots of pictures about what we did on the clergy renewal leave. I will tell you today that part of the clergy renewal leave, there was a theme to it, and it was a pilgrimage of my faith. And the leadership here at Arapahoe Road and I worked together, and we identified four areas that fit into that pilgrimage of faith, and that was freeing, faith, family, and focusing. And those are some of the areas I'll tell you more about this afternoon. We want to show you pictures from our travel to the Holy Land, to Israel. I was able to meet with some mentors that have just spoken truth over my life and walked with me through the ups and downs of life. And we're going to do all that this afternoon. But part of what this morning was about was to tell you a little bit about less about what we did and some about some significant things that I think God just taught me, you know? And man, he just taught me about margin. He taught me about solitude and just pulling away. Come this afternoon at 4 o'clock. We want to tell you, here's some tidbits for you. We went to 77 different Holy Land sites. I was able to meet with 95 different mentors, friends, or family members. I visited 86 cities in 9 states in 5 countries and over 9,000 pictures, but I promise we won't go through all 9,000 today, okay? We might get through a few, not that many. Right now, we want to transition as we continue our time of worship together to another type of rest. Another type of rest called the Lord's Supper. If you're going to help pass out those elements, if you'd make your way to the front this time. The Lord's Supper is what we do to remember the incredible sacrifice that Christ made on our behalf and on the behalf of all who profess to follow him. And if you profess to follow Jesus Christ as Lord, you're invited to participate in this time of remembrance with us. The Lord's Supper is kind of appropriate for what I've been talking about this morning, because in its own way, in the busyness of what it sometimes is to follow Christ and to walk after the Lord, there's still times within that that we need to pull away and just retreat into the margins. And this is kind of a little margin that we get to retreat into today and just have some withness between us and the Lord as we reflect on what he did for us. And it's so great what the way Jesus set this up, because he shows really one thing that he knew would never go away. All the things that are different between now and biblical times, and you could write thousands of things, but the one thing that people still do, they still eat and they still drink. He knew that until the end of time, we would eat and we would drink. So he decided to take those things and help us remember these elements. And I want to read for you from a book mentor that I read from on leave. As we prepare to take the bread together, it's important that we engage with this type of rest when we follow Christ. This is a time to remember his great sacrifice for us, but it's also a time for us to remember, Lord, here's where I'm at. Here's where my stuff is, Lord. Here's where my weakness is. Here's where I need to do better in following you. And Thomas Merton says, if we know how great is the love of Jesus for us, we will never be afraid to go to him in all our poverty, all of our weakness, all of our spiritual wretchedness and infirmity. Indeed, when we understand the true nature of his love for us, we will prefer to come to him poor and helpless. We will never be ashamed of our distress, Distress is to our advantage when we have nothing to seek but mercy. We can be glad of our helplessness when we really believe that His power is made perfect in our infirmity. And His power, friends, was made perfect on the cross when His body was broken to triumph over sin, death, Satan, and hell.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to distribute this recording, but please do not sell or alter it in any way. For more information about Arapahoe Road Baptist Church, please visit our church website at arapahoeroad.org. Arapahoe Road Baptist Church is located at 2256 Arapahoe Road in Garland, Texas, with Sunday morning services at 9:30 a.m. Feel free to join us this week.